Hello, everybody. I'm Dwayne Mancini, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. For more information on Project MedTech, our events we host, our consulting and advisory services, and to sign up for our monthly newsletter, visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, and follow us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying this content, don't forget to check out our other podcasts by searching Funding MedTech on your favorite podcast platform or by heading to our website. Funding MedTech is our newest podcast that is a spinoff of our MedTech Money podcast series. There won't be any new episodes of MedTech Money, but I encourage you to check out those old episodes as there's some awesome content on raising and investing capital. Funding MedTech is an interview-style podcast focused on exploring ways to fund MedTech innovation and will be released weekly on Wednesdays. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Voluntium. Voluntium is a contract design and manufacturing firm specializing in the end-to-end development, production, and post-market support of diagnostic and therapeutic active medical devices, especially active implantables and other Class 3 medical devices. Voluntium's core competencies include electrical engineering and design, mechanical engineering and design, embedded software, software as a medical device, mobile apps, CGMP contract manufacturing, embedded cybersecurity, OT cybersecurity, systems engineering, human factors and usability, and automated test systems. With customers all over the world, Voluntium works with clients in every stage and situation, ranging from startups seeking funding to established Fortune 100 companies. Visit Voluntium.com to explore your next step in medical device development. In this episode, Tosin Ugbe at ScopeMed and I discuss his background as a clinician, the evolution of ScopeMed, what he learned so far, and so much more. So without further ado, my discussion with my friend, Tosin Ugbe.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Okay. Tosin, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate you.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So Tosin, introduction, who you are, your background, and then get into what you're doing with ScopeMed.
No, absolutely. So, Tosin Ugbe, I was born and raised in Nigeria and moved to Canada in 2004 with my family. Moved to Cleveland in 2012 to study for my Master's of Science in Anesthesia at Case Western. Worked at a major level one trauma center in the area for a while, and recently decamped to Ohio Health in Mansfield, working for a private anesthesia group. And now, of course, you're in this venture full-time as the CEO founder of ScopeMed. And we started around the pandemic trying to improve the respiratory care solutions we saw in the hospitals based on the shortcomings. And what we're focusing on now is an innovative form of high-flow oxygen therapy, which is a form of non-invasive ventilation. So somewhere in the same category as CPAP, in between getting some oxygen and being placed on a ventilator. That was sort of this revelation during the pandemic, where a paradigm shift from people placing people on the ventilators early to this therapy led to countless lives being saved. And we have an innovative form we're excited about. It's more available, it's more efficient, and it bypasses the expensive equipment needed to implement this in hospitals.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, for those who are listening in, if you go to our website, you'll see ScopeMed's logo there. We have been working with Tosin for the last maybe couple years, maybe since 2022. Within that time frame, though, Tosin, you've kind of went through a couple different products, like you briefly mentioned there, and you know, for us who know the med tech space, that to me shows that you're married to the problem,
right,
and not just your solution that you invented. So, kind of walk me through a little more in detail why you originally founded the company. You kind of briefly mentioned it, but then what the pivot was, why there was the pivot, and what you're really focusing on now, and maybe overshare some details there.
No, absolutely. So We started out during the pandemic. I'm a frontline worker. I like do anesthesia, and there was this sudden realization that the invisible respiratory particles around us were indeed the real enemy, not necessarily saliva coming from the patient. And I think we knew this, but this just brought that to light. And people started trying all these stopgap measures, bringing acrylic boxes into the operating room so proceduralists could stick their arms through to try to, intubate or place devices into the patient's airway. And all these sorts of different attempts at mitigating the aerosol problem. And in my mind, we were looking at this, looking at all this and thought like there were more elegant solutions out there. There's this anesthesia mask that we use, and it's a single-use thing. As soon as we establish an airway for the patient, that goes straight to the landfill. And thought, why not make that modular? Why not create some systems in there to occlude the medical instruments going into the patient's airway? And why not use the same device for oxygen delivery? Well, the problem with current anesthesia masks is that they're not comfortable for the patient, which is why you need to switch to a different oxygen delivery device afterwards. And oxygen delivery systems can't do anything to prevent respiratory particle transmission because they can, the masks, they contain these two small vents in the side, so you can't just put breathing filters on them. The work of breathing will be too suffocating for the patient. So we had to innovate on an open-style oxygen mask that can deliver oxygen and then still be able to integrate breathing filters and not increase the work of breathing for the patient. And that's where most of our development work went, and we did that. And some of the hottest masks on the device on the market right now need to use reservoir bags to concentrate oxygen delivery and get past 97% of oxygen. And we're doing that without a need for that. And we have a clearance for instruments like an endoscopy scope to go through. Current devices on the market offer too much resistance for the procedure, at least during that procedure. So even though we had to go through that development cycle, it's still good because our product is synergistic with a new system of high flow oxygen therapy we're using. We'll get to that, but you can pretty much use our nasal cannula, and then you can place our mask on top of that nasal cannula to deliver higher oxygen content, more humidity, and nebulized medication. So it's turned into this synergistic portfolio solution we have to offer hospitals that we're excited about.
Yeah, that's great. Talk to me a little bit about identifying the problem and the value that you almost saw in being a clinician, right? We talk about identifying problems in the U.S. healthcare system and why clinicians, not just physicians, but nurses, nurse anesthetists, NPs, PAs, physical therapists, why it's so important to have their insight when they're identifying the problems that we're kind of going out to solve. So how much did your role as a clinician play in you really not just finding the problem, but becoming an absolute expert in that problem and that issue?
No, that's a key insight there. In the sense that I think a lot of discovery or innovation networks are starting to realize that, a lot of solutions don't come from doctors alone, but there's a whole ecosystem of clinicians in the hospitals that participate in this and then that have like keen insights that they can learn from. So in anesthesia, the anesthesiologist typically supervises about 3 or 4 different rooms. And clinicians like ourselves, certified anesthetists or nurse anesthetists, man those rooms to perform a lot of the airway duties and stuff. And on top of that, we're kind of generalists in the sense that we cover all sorts of services, general anesthesia, vascular, endoscopy, and whatnot. So we get to go around, see different equipments being used, see what surgeons struggle with, hear when the expletive is being said while using an instrument, getting an understanding of the pain point from that. Now, you always have to take that and then go farm that out to get better customer discovery outside of your social circles or your people you deal with, who might not give you the most frank feedback, so to speak. But right there in that situation, that environment, you can gain a lot of key insights about how things are done and the shortcomings of the status quo.
Yeah, I'm curious on, I'm going to ask you in a second here about being, you know, going from clinician to entrepreneur. One of the pieces I want to ask you though is, you know, as a clinician, you sometimes aren't, you might not have the best understanding of the economic story behind the healthcare system, right?
Right.
Of why decisions are made in a hospital, why insurance will cover product A but not product B, all these different things. I'm curious from your side, going from clinician to entrepreneur, what was the biggest thing you learned about from like the business aspect of the U.S. healthcare system?
No, that very well said. And I think one of the things I learned from listening to your podcast that really crystallized this thought was when you had David Sylvan on, and he said, who pays, who benefits, who measures, and I forget the last one, who uses, I think, all four different key players in the ecosystem. And, you know, I throughout this process, I got an MBA from Cleveland State University. So I am entrepreneurial in that regard and like to try to learn about the market and not just the science as a clinician. But that's very key. Like if people take one thing out of, you know, any conversations they have going into the ecosystem, is that you have to understand those four key principles and how to make a solution that benefits them, right? So I hear a lot of people, you know, talking about those key insights we gain. I hear a lot of my colleagues say, oh, somebody should do this, they'll go make $1 million. And you're just like, I don't think they'll make any money. You know what? I actually don't even think they'll be able to raise any money going into that, because that's, you're looking at things from your perspective and what's going to benefit us. Not necessarily from the patient or from the hospital system, the payer, the vice president of the supply chain, whatnot. So I think just taking that, and you guys have really helped us out as a company, understanding that that's the great work you do, being able to be involved and rub elbows with a lot of those players and a lot of those elements of the system, and it be able to take us out of that clinician mindset and understand the whole perspective.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that feedback. You know, Tosin, I'm also curious too, closing a thought here on that piece. You know, a lot of times we'll hear from clinicians and like just exactly what you said, right? Oh man, if we did this, we would make so much money, or this would be a home run. I can tell you just from my experience that there are very few obvious quick wins in healthcare. Right. Where people sometimes think like they have this great idea that just thought of out of nowhere. There's probably a reason no one's thought of something that simple sometimes. Either the economics don't work out, or group A is going to be like, yeah, no way, we're not letting that happen. So it's so funny you bring that up, because we see that so often. I'm curious, what else from going from a clinician to an entrepreneur, what was the biggest adjustment?
I think the biggest adjustment, especially coming from someone like myself, who was a very key part of the development of the technology and, trying to, you know, bring that into full effect, is going from the mindset of talking about the science and the product to speaking in the language that's going to attract those other key stakeholders that you're going to be talking to and selling to, right? You know, I talk to people and they're like, man, forget about the science. I know you're excited about that, whatever, but what's going to attract an investor? What's going to be able to get that money to push this forward? How are you going to speak to these investors? So that's a different hat to wear, and stuff, because what got me going excited about this wasn't like necessarily just the investment opportunity or whatnot, you know. You can play in the stock market for that. As a clinician, you try and bring a solution that's going to be beneficial to patients and also going to be widely adopted by clinicians themselves, because it's a better option there. But it's just a different mindset. You know, you guys talk to us when you work with us on our pitch decks. It's just like, okay, you're going to have a pitch deck for this certain type of investor, for this type of investor. Like, even within investors, there are different pitch decks, let alone what you're going to speak to the supply chain person about, the value analysis committee members about. So just understanding all those hats you have to wear and how to speak their languages was definitely a transition, or it's currently a transition.
Yeah, it's big. I mean, it's honestly, you know, we have a lot of there's a lot of theories around what makes the ideal entrepreneur and all these different things. But I don't know what the answer is, but one key piece from what I've seen is the ability to sell and understand some of those business development aspects is super important, right? Understanding what their pain points are and speaking to those individual pain points is really important. Clinician entrepreneur, staying on that theme, raising capital, obviously new for you. Walk me through some of those, you know, early lessons learned, what you've learned so far. I think oftentimes it's sexy, if you will, to talk to the entrepreneur who's raised $100 million, done a successful exit. But I love asking this question to someone who's out there currently doing it or doing it for the first time. Like, what are those fresh wounds that you currently have, and how can we learn from those so the next person can maybe avoid some of those? So I'd love to hear some of those from you.
No, absolutely. I think the first major lesson in that is what we just talked about. The difference between being excited about a product and telling a story that's going to be exciting to the investor who has to put in, hard-earned cash to push this venture forward. So that's the first big lesson. The second one is how long it's going to take. Don't be naive about the process. It's going to take a long time, and if you get to be more process oriented than outcome oriented, and you're going to learn from this, right? You don't write your final exam on the first day of class. You go through that couple of semesters, maybe a 3-4 year master's program or whatever degree. A lot of that is just process of attrition, stuff you'll never have to use again, but you still have to go through that to be battle tested, to, you know, form those calluses and really build that story. They're going to poke holes at it, but if you think that you take that as a process, then you're going to learn from that and enjoy the journey. And don't lose your enthusiasm or your exuberance, and fall down during that process. It's like, once you get this to that end point, you'll feel a lot better for it. The whole company will come out a lot better for it. And it might be nice to go speak to one investor and raise millions of dollars and that's all you have to do, but have you really gotten that feedback? Have you really, been put through the test, and stuff? So I think if you look at this as a process, it'll help alleviate or mitigate the burden that's still going through this process.
Yeah, love that. I'll get another piece of advice, because we were just having some conversations today at lunch around this, and it's centered around a speech I heard down at the CEO retreat, and one of the guys up there said, understanding how people are incentivized helps you understand why they gave the answer they might have given to you. There was also Daniel Hawkins, who was the former CEO, founder of Shockwave Medical, had also said, something about when I ask questions is I just understand what assumptions they may be making, and then that enables me to say, well, hey, if that assumption was wrong, would that change your opinion at all? This kind of thing. So it's pretty much teaching you the process of how you ask questions and obtain feedback. And one of the things that we see a lot of startups make is they go talk to some successful VC that probably doesn't invest in anything before Series A or Series B, and they'll give them advice and they'll run with that advice. And I'm not saying that advice is bad, but just understand what has informed their feeling on how you should do something is critically important. We see so many startups that get advice, they change their pitch deck. Get advice, change their pitch deck, and you just walk through what we were talking about, which was, well, let's lead with what we feel is the best pitch deck. And then we'll update as we have that conversation with the investor, because every investor is different, right? And I'll give you a great example. Without naming any names, we, for our 60 clients that we work with, we have a template. Scope Med's one pager would look pretty similar to a lot of other clients' one pager, right? It's very similar. We've sent the same executive summary 10 different times to this one investor. And on the 11th time, their feedback to us was, I don't really like the format of your one pager. And I replied back and said, it's the exact same as these other 10 companies. And you never said anything. Right. And so my point is, you know, it's, you just got to understand like what's actual good feedback and what's not. Right. So I wanted to share that story.
No, that's I like that.
Yeah. I think I want to finish on the why question. So let's talk about why we're doing the podcast. You know, it's not just because Tosin is a client, but part of we had our Midwest showcase here in Cleveland, Ohio, August 30th. We had 40 startups apply to pitch. We had an independent review board pick 10. Tosin was one of those. 10 companies pitched. Tosin came in second. Part of that was to get a podcast interview. We wanted to bring that up really quick as well. But Tosin, curious, you know, obviously you did something right with the pitch, right?
Right.
Because it's not just pitch deck, right? It's how you present yourself, how you carry yourself. Talk to me, give me some advice for some of the entrepreneurs out there on, you know, some of the tips for pitching, you know, doing some of these like 7-minute pitch competitions. You had 7 minutes to pitch, no questions, and you had to convince 5 people to vote for you, right? So curious on your advice there.
Right. I think some of the textbook points that people always make, you know, you want to hit the problem, the solution, the market opportunity, and why, you know, you're differentiated, it really hits home. I think where some people go wrong, at least, you know, that might work for people, you know, a lot of people who have done stuff wrong have raised way more money than I've ever raised. So who am I to tell them they're wrong? But I think what works for me is just to be comfortable with myself and just, you know, relate to other people, just convey to people what we're doing. So for instance, high flow oxygen therapy, it's a nebulous concept for a lot of people. I always have to describe what a nasal cannula is first that delivers oxygen and say, oh, this does 10 times that amount, but 10 times that amount is 60 liters, you know, walk them through that process and it needs to be heated and humidified. But you have to tell that in a 7-minute time frame. And without the iterative process going through with your team, especially Aaron Tanusen, who I, you know, pretty much talk to more than my younger brother, really, some family members, is that you probably don't get there. And that's why the process of attrition of speaking to investors and speaking to a lot of stakeholders is still important. You know, you have to take with a grain of salt the feedback you get and see, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff. But then that iterative process helps you nail that down, because the hardest thing is keeping things simple.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the acronym? KISS? Keep it simple, stupid.
Simple, stupid. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Awesome. Final question. Why do this? Right. I think this is the questions, you know, for a lot of clinician to entrepreneurs is, you know, why make the switch? Why not just come up with the idea, give it to someone, let it go? Right? Why make the switch to being an entrepreneur?
No, that's a very good question. And I think it's because I'm mostly passionate about this. I'm passionate about scaling better solutions for the benefit of more people, and not from a totally utilitarian perspective where you get so abstract you don't understand like current human feelings or run through a lot of bumps and a lot of people to get there. But just from, we see the shortcomings of clinical care. We understand the pain points. We understand the key clinical insights. And I just have a passion for this. And that's why I went and got an MBA. And that's why I'm going through the process with you guys and just studying the healthcare system and learning how to sell to different stakeholders. Because once you can get that way, that combined superpower can be unbelievable, you know. And this is probably not the, you know, only startup I will. There are several, problems in healthcare and solutions we can think of that I'm passionate about that we want to bring to the forefront. But for something like hypoxia therapy, it really was a revelation. You know, medicine is so conservative. You know, adoption is very slow for a lot of things. This is something that's been available for decades. And COVID came and we kept doing the same status quo, placing people in the ventilators. And, you know, we had a lot of adverse outcomes until there was a paradigm shift to this therapy, right? And a lot of people benefited from that. But we can't just go back to status quo and, you know, do away with that until we wait for the next pandemic. There are a lot of situations where people can benefit from this therapy right now. In the operating room, I extubate or take out a breathing tube from a patient with severe sleep apnea. We don't have this therapy available in most places. You're doing an endoscopy procedure with the way they put the EGD scope in and patients start to obstruct left and right. You know, 53% hypoxemia reports, they account for a third of legal claims in anesthesia and out of OR anesthesia, and they can benefit from this therapy. And we still don't have that available 3 years after we learned major lessons during the pandemic. So we're excited about making this in a way that's compatible with a hospital supply in any hospital location, in the ED, the OR, the, you know, out of OR suites, like the GI suites. And by doing that, we can enable hospitals to use this therapy early in the ED and save those critical ICU or room slots with hypoxia therapy for people who need them, or, you know, people who don't need that but need those ICU rooms, and then get data and be able to gain better visibility into their system and, you know, allocate those spots for people in more need. And they're very good efficacy results coming out showing the benefits of this in treatment of COPD, sleep apnea, congestive heart failure. So I think as an entrepreneur and as a clinician, I'm excited about that process of being able to bring superior therapies and make them more available to more people.
Yeah, I love it. Tosin, last question. I know I said the other one was, but this one is the last one. What do you like to do in your free time?
Oh man, you won't show up. You know what I like to do in my free time. You won't show up. You had another baby as an excuse. I like to lift weights, but most of all, I'm very passionate about basketball. I love to play basketball. Everybody listening, Dwayne talked a good game, but never showed up. No, I'm kidding. yeah. Exercise, play basketball, but I got a beautiful family, a wife and two kids, and they're at our precious ages right now, 4 and 6. They're awesome. So these are the great stages. So kick back with family.
Yeah.
I
think collectively, both our daughters have made quite a few appearances on some Scope Med Project MedTech calls in the past.
Absolutely.
And yes, unfortunately, I have not played basketball with Tosin yet. We'll chalk it up to Tosin doesn't want the smoke.
Or Dwayne doesn't want these buckets.
Yeah.
Both right, fire Tosin. References, I guess.
hey God, for 1 minute we'll chat offline. Link to Tosin's website, Scope Med's website, in the show notes. We'll put his LinkedIn in there as well. And Tosin, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh yeah, appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.